Welcome to the Intuitive Eating and Body Positivity Podcast. I'm Terry and I'll be talking about all things intuitive eating, body positivity and health at every size, and shaking off weight stigma, diet culture and food rules so that we can all have a better relationship with food and our bodies. Hello, hello. How has your week been? Mine's been pretty good, pretty average, nothing much going on really. I'm going to be that British person now. What has happened to the weather? Where's the sun gone? Why is it raining? It's summer. Bring back the sun. Everybody do a sun dance for me, please. I need the sun back in my life. Especially since bank holiday's coming up. I want to have a barbecue. I want to sit outside in the sun. We'll see, hey? We'll see. So actually, let me tell you about some food things from this week. Here are things that 2 years ago you would never have heard me say. One piece of toast is enough. I'm bored of pizza. No, thank you. I don't want to finish my cannelloni. Honestly, I would never have said that before, but these are things that I now say. I make bread. Well, I don't make bread myself. I have a bread maker. A bread machine. You chuck everything in it and you turn it on. That counts as making bread, right? I can call myself a baker, yes? Well, I've found that when I have fresh bread, I actually don't need that much of it. So before I would have eaten half the loaf. If you'd have given me half a chance, I'd have eaten the whole loaf. But I've found that if I have a slice of toast now, by the end of it, I'm pretty much done. I don't need another slice. And I know that these slices are bigger. I know that they're thicker. But still, I'm really done by the end of a slice of bread. Or a slice of toast. That's quite a shock to me. I really, really love bread. And pizza. So earlier in the week we had pizza and I found myself bored with it by the end. I was not that bothered about finishing it, so I didn't. Because what's the point in forcing food in if you're not enjoying it anymore? That's now my policy when it comes to eating. I really enjoyed the pizza up until a certain point and then I didn't really want it anymore. So I just left it and I had some the next day. And cannelloni, I love cannelloni. But I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with it because I really don't like making it. I love the finished product, but I do not love making it. I had spent ages trying to find cannelloni tubes to make this meal with. And then by the time I'd found them, by the time I'd faffed around making it and put it in the oven, I was really hungry. But the faff of making it took away the enjoyment of the actual meal when it was cooked. So if you ever made cannelloni, it's a mess. So you have to do all the mince and everything. And then you have to stuff these pasta tubes with that mince. And the tubes, I think they're smaller now. I genuinely do think that they're smaller because you can't even fit a teaspoon down them anymore. So you're trying to fill these tubes with this mincemeat and then you have to somehow pick this tube full of mincemeat up and put it into the baking dish ready for the toppings and things. But when it was done, it looked glorious. It looked lovely and I dished it up and I did it with a nice bit of salad and stuff. And then it was really disappointing. It was nice. It tasted good. It tasted as it should, but I was just disappointed with it because I'd not enjoyed the process of making it. And then I don't know if I'd gone past the point of that hungry when I came to eat it, but anyway, that was that. So I didn't finish that. Now, ordinarily, if you'd have gone back 2 years, I'd have made sure I had every last scrap. But on this occasion, I wasn't enjoying it, so I stopped eating. I don't know whether this should be a positive or a negative to intuitive eating. The positive is I have some self-control. I don't have to eat everything on my plate. I don't have to have multiple slices of toast. I don't have to finish a meal if I'm not enjoying it. The flip side of that is that this food that I once really loved and couldn't get enough of, now I'm done with after half the amount that I would have been before. No, that's definitely a positive. That is a positive because I still enjoy it. I don't dislike the food anymore. I definitely still love it. It just takes less to be satisfied by it. I am in tune with what I'm enjoying now. So that's good. I like it. I like it. It's a plus. I'm not mindlessly shoving food in my mouth anymore. And that is a good thing. If you've listened to previous episodes, which I hope you have, you will know that I talk a lot about the binge restrict cycle and how when you restrict a lot of food, when you finally get your hands on it, you binge on it. And that's definitely where this food change has come from for me. I know that previously I would have eaten all of that food because I didn't know when I was going to have it next. If we had pizza, I would have to eat it all because I didn't know when I was going to have pizza next. If I was on a diet, cannelloni was not the sort of thing that I could have without turning it into some really rubbish form of it. So, you know, when you're on a diet and they say, oh, here's a great way to save some calories or some sins or some points when you're making a lasagna, why don't you take the white sauce out and replace it with cottage cheese or something equally as disgusting? Well, that meant that things like cannelloni were always off the table for me. And then when I did have it, when I did get my hands on it, of course, it was a free-for-all because I didn't know when I was next going to have it. And the same with bread, because it was so heavily restricted all the time. When I did have it, I would eat and I wouldn't stop. And I would have multiple slices of toast, multiple slices of bread. Even from when I was young, I remember bread being restricted. I remember my mum being on a diet and having this bread. It was called Nimble. And these were the tiniest, thinnest, most pathetic pieces of bread you have ever had the misfortune to eat. They don't even come anywhere near to being valid of the categorization of bread. Honestly, it's a poor excuse for a sandwich when you're using Nimble instead of actual bread. So I know for a long time that it's been drummed into me that bread is the enemy or you can't have too much of it, you know, that sort of thing. So forever and a day, bread has been one of my nemesis foods. It's been one of those foods that I've had no control around. But now, as an intuitive eater, me and bread, we're good mates. I have some, I don't have some, whichever, it's fine. Interesting, isn't it? The way restriction and binging all comes together. And then once you let go of the restriction side of things, the other side of things goes away. It's amazing how our bodies and our brains work in that respect. All of these messages, though, that we learn, things like don't eat too much bread, don't have too much cannelloni, don't have too much pizza, that all stems from messages that come from diet culture. Diet companies spreading this message that these things are bad for us. In one way, shape, or form, diet culture gets in our head, and this is how we end up with food rules. And it's not just about explicitly what type of food you're allowed. Things like the amount of calories you're allowed to eat, foods that are good, foods that are bad. Exercise and how you should exercise to eat. Wrong. Just putting that out there. And the guilt that comes around food. And these end up being voices in our heads. They end up being this niggling thought that anytime you even contemplate going near any food that is supposedly not good for your diet or not good for you to eat, then you end up with this horrible voice in your head that's telling you that you shouldn't eat it and the things that you'll have to do if you do eat it and the way you're going to make up for it after, that sort of thing. And these thoughts in your head are what we call the food police. And let me tell you, those food police are mean. That little voice that's telling you how many calories is in that donut you're about to eat, food police. That voice in your head when you come out of your exercise class telling you that you can now go and have something to eat because, you know, you've burnt off all those calories, food police. That voice on a Monday morning that's telling you you've had a hell of a weekend, you've eaten far too much food, better cut back this week, diet starts today. Food police, food police, food police. And you know where the food police comes from? It comes from the external food police. It comes from the magazine companies with their messages all over the front covers. Oh, there was a horrible, horrible thing going around social media not so long back. There was, I think it was the National Enquirer in the States, did a big spread on the good, the bad and the ugly, basically, of bikini bodies for summer. And they intentionally posted pictures of celebrities or people who were in the public eye in some way, shape or form, of these people having a nice time at the beach with their family, with their friends, in their swimming costumes, and they tore shreds off them. It was absolutely horrific. It made fun of them, it chastised them, and it basically drilled the message into its readers that this is what you are not to look like. This is letting yourself go. This is disgusting. The article was disgusting. Honestly, absolutely shocked by it. And that was blatantly obvious. What you don't realise is that these messages are there in a much more subtle form all the time anyway. So on these magazine covers, when you've got titles like 5 healthy snacks to have in your lunchbox this week, or slim down for Christmas in 14 days, you know, that sort of thing. That's all messages that you are taking in all the time by these magazine food police, or advertising slogans. There was a company that makes crisps. They did a recent advertising campaign that said that basically their crisps weren't as low in calories as they would like to be, but they're lower, and that makes them okay to eat. How about eat a bag of crisps? If you want a bag of crisps, eat a bag of crisps without being concerned about the calories. All the influencers and the companies that are on social media that are telling you about detoxing and cleansing and lifestyle changes, food police, all the people around you that are telling you that you shouldn't eat that really, or, oh, how can you eat that? You know, they somehow swing it round and they're like, oh, I couldn't possibly eat that. No, far too many calories for me. Or, oh no, I'm slimming down, I'm going on holiday soon. Or even worse, oh God, you're so good, you just eat what you want. I wish I was like that. Well, be like that then. Eat what you want. That's the answer, is it not? And somehow, even though they're talking about themselves, what they've done is put those food police thoughts right in your brain for you to mull over in some weird reverse psychology. They are now making you feel bad because of their restriction. See what I mean? And here is the worst of all food police. The what I eat in a day posts. You know those posts where people say what they've eaten in the day or in the past week, and they share the photos and they make it feel like that's what you should eat in a day. Here is what I eat, therefore you should eat it too. But actually what they're showing you is their highlights reel of their day or their week. They're showing you what they're choosing to show you. They're not showing you the snacks and the bits and pieces around those meals that they've shared with you. In fact, they probably don't even realise that they are snacking sometimes. It's too easy to just grab a biscuit as you pass or finish off the bits that are on the kids' plates once they've finished eating. That sort of thing. Not stuff you should ever feel bad about, but stuff they choose not to show you when they're sharing the food that they have eaten that day. The food that they are feeling so holier than thou about. So here's the thing. This is what I want you to remember. Guilt is for people who steal or lie or murder someone, that sort of thing. Guilt is not something that should be involved with food. You shouldn't feel guilty for eating. But the food police, they make sure you do stay guilty. They are judge and jury. They are scrutinising everything you eat. And every time we put a food rule in place, we give them power. Every time we decide we're not going to eat after a certain time in the evening, we're not going to eat until a certain time of day, we're only going to have this many calories, or we cut out food groups, that's putting a rule in place that the food police can then enforce. And they're not helpful. They don't bring you any kind of assistance at all. Our good old local bobbies on the street, you'd like to think if you went and talked to them and asked for some assistance, you'd get some assistance. The food police, however, different kettle of fish. Now, I asked this question to somebody earlier in the week. Where does kettle of fish come from? If you know, can you message me please and let me know? Anyway, food police, different whole thing altogether. They're not there to help you. They are there to criticise and to judge and to make you feel bad. And they drive these weird responses from us. Have a think about this. How do you feel when you hear these thoughts in your head? So if I was the voice in your head saying, don't eat that donut, you've had too many calories today. What kind of response does that prompt in you? It's going to be guilt, yes. Maybe a bit of shame. Maybe you're angry because you want the donut and now you're not really allowing yourself to eat it. Maybe it's going to make you kick back and do it anyway because you're sick of it. You're sick of these rules. It makes you think about food more. It makes you feel guilty about food more. It makes you sad. It makes you disappointed. And it makes you think things like, why can I not just stay on a diet? Why can I not keep to an exercise plan like lots of my friends do? Why? Or it makes you feel bad about eating it because you go ahead and eat it anyway. And then afterwards, you feel gross, for example. You feel bloated. You feel fat. You feel disgusted in yourself for having eaten it. And then this leads to behaviour changes, because then afterwards you're thinking about how you can make up for that food that you've just eaten. And here we go again, you're back in that vicious cycle. But you know what? Now is the time to turn that around. Now is the time to change it. Be interested in your thoughts. Be interested in where they come from and why you think them. Going back to the bread, this is something that used to crop up for me and still does at times. When I have bread for my lunch and I've had toast for breakfast, I quite often think, oh, I shouldn't have bread again. I had bread this morning. I shouldn't have more bread. Now, I know that that's ingrained in me from when I was going to slimming clubs. So I know where that thought's come from. I know what's driving those food police at that time. But it's not always that easy to pick out where these thoughts have come from. A lot of it, for example, might be old family stuff. When I was young, we weren't allowed free rein over the biscuit tin, for example. And I know that I used to go sneak biscuits. So I know that there were restrictions going on in my house when I was quite little. And it wasn't a mean restriction. It wasn't that anybody was trying to do anything bad. It was a case of, we only have so many biscuits, so let's spread them out across the week. Or it's not really very good for you to eat lots of biscuits in one sitting. That's what my parents believed. So you can have one at a time, you know, something like that. And there may be things for you that are long ingrained, reasons you don't even realise. But get interested in your thoughts. And when you start to think about things like this, when thoughts pop up, when the food police pop up and tell you you shouldn't be eating something, or you shouldn't behave in that way, or you need to do something else in order to compensate for that food, investigate that for yourself and think about why you feel like that. Be kind to yourself in those thoughts. Turn it round and make it a compassionate voice and say, I know right now you think you're not allowed to have another piece of toast, but actually, that's what I need to have right now in order to feel satisfied. Because it's better to honour that, to be aware of it, and to have what you really, really want than to put it off and put it off and put it off and listen to those food police. And then later you still want it anyway. And if you do go ahead and you eat this food that you've been telling yourself that you shouldn't eat, and afterwards you feel awful for it, again, have some compassion, change your thought process. Going back to that feeling horrible after eating, you can acknowledge it. You can say, okay, I don't feel good after eating pizza. It makes me bloated. It makes me uncomfortable. It makes me sleepy. It doesn't suit me. However, this feeling is temporary. Give it an hour, I'll be feeling fine. There is nothing to be gained from beating yourself up because you feel physically rubbish after eating food. You've done it. You can't change it. Would you change it anyway if you could go back and do it again? Probably not, because you've enjoyed it and that's the main thing. You just have to know it's a temporary feeling and that in a little while you'll be feeling much better. Now, obviously, it goes without saying, if you eat a food that raises an intolerance for you and makes you feel really poorly, probably not the best of ideas. So obviously I'm talking about foods that don't have an actual physical intolerance or allergy attached to them. Just wanted to clear that up because I don't want you rushing out and thinking, ah, to hell with my allergies, I will eat all I want. Please don't do that. You can change that self-talk. You can change the food police in your head. You can't really do much about the magazines and people around you that are talking about food and guilt and making you intentionally feel bad about things. But you can change the thoughts in your head. You can change the way you think about food. You can choose to enjoy it. You can choose to feel the satisfaction and the pleasure in food. You can choose your behaviour after you've eaten. You can turn your thoughts around. Even if you catch yourself with a negative thought, you can turn that around and replace it with a compassionate one. So there are two messages that I want to get across today. The one I've already said, guilt is not a feeling that should be attached to food. Guilt is for people who have done bad things, for people who have murdered somebody, stolen something, lied through their teeth, and not in the like acceptable little white lie kind of a way. You know, those kind of people, that's who should be feeling guilty. You shouldn't be feeling guilty for eating food. And live by the motto, for the most part. For the most part, I listened to my hunger signals this week. For the most part, I ate food that satisfied me. For the most part, I felt good and energized by the food that I was eating. For the most part, I enjoyed the exercise I was doing this week because I remembered to go out for a walk every day. You know, just an example. But for the most part, if you can say that about the way you approach food, that's all you can ask of yourself. And that's a pretty good way to live. So, to hell with you, food police. Don't give them the power. Don't give them the control. Can you imagine if we managed to shut out all those messages? Can you imagine who would go out of business if we suddenly stopped listening to all this stuff around us and stopped spending money on it? Can you imagine? Diet companies would go out of business. Magazines, probably. And newspapers, probably. Maybe not newspapers because they have actual news to report sometimes, but magazines for sure would have nothing to write about anymore. Makeup companies would no longer be required. Beauty procedures that are purely cosmetic, probably, they would disappear. Clothing companies that are there to slim you down, you know, like body shapewear, that sort of stuff. You know, like fat pants that you wear under your dress to slim out all the lines. They wouldn't be required anymore. All the things like the shakes diets. I know I've said diet companies, but the thought of those disappearing just is awesome. But then the things that aren't blatantly diets, like, oh, you know, the 9-day cleanses, let's just say that. Things like cleansing and juicing and, oh God, those horrible vitamin injections, drip things, all of that, they'd go out of business. It would just leave space for the people who actually need the cosmetic surgery because they've had an accident or a burn or something. Oh, we can dream, can't we? Oh, for a day when companies and influencers and people were not busy trying to tell us that we need to be thinner or more shapely or taller or shorter or blonder or, you know, all these crazy things that they think we should be to be accepted. Oh, to see the back of all of that. That is the dream, isn't it, eh? Oh, this leads in quite nicely to the listener question this week. Right, the question was, when and why did it become fashionable to be skinny? What an amazing question. You don't realise, do you, that these body trends change over time and it goes through phases of what you should look like in any given era. So, are you ready for a little history lesson? I am going back to BC. I'm not even in the days of AD. I am in BC. I am right back in ancient Egypt now. In ancient Egypt, figures were to be youthful and very slim with narrow hips. And then a little bit later in ancient Greece, it changed. And then all of a sudden you were expected to have wide hips and a large chest. So in the days, even before what we know now to be beauty standards and diet culture and all of that, right back in 1200 BC, they were concerned with how they looked. How mad is that? Anyway, then moving on, then we get to AD and in the Italian Renaissance, it was very arty. Did you like how I pronounced that? And with this arty look came larger breasts, a rounded stomach, and fuller hips. So we've gone from very slim with narrow hips to larger, rounded stomach, full hips. So now can you see things like paintings where the women have all got a little bit of a belly on them? That's where we're at now. Then when we get into Victorian times, in the years of Queen Victoria, it was very much about the corset. You are going to be plump, but you're going to have an hourglass figure. And boy, were you going to suffer for it. I have worn a corset for a performance. It is not a pleasant experience, and I didn't even have mine done that tightly. I just did it up so that it was done up rather than actually sucking everything in. But wow, the Victorians and those things. Fair due to them, because I couldn't stick it. But again, this is what people do in the attempt to be accepted, isn't it? Then when we get into the 20s, you've got the flappers. So you can picture that in your head, can't you? Short skirts, very up and down as a figure, you know, flat-chested, lacking in any shape, really. Then in the 30s to the 50s, that's when you've got the Hollywood era. Very curvy. If you think of Marilyn Monroe, that's not flapper-like at all, is it? So we've gone from very, very straight, very thin in the 20s to in the 30s, we're going curvy. Back to that hourglass figure. Until the 60s came round. And then it's almost like the 20s again, just with a different style, isn't it? You've got people like Twiggy. Anybody remember who Twiggy is? Or is that just a name that I know and everybody else is too young to know it? Twiggy was famously very thin, very long legs. That era was all about tall and thin and leggy. And interestingly, around that time, anorexia became more prevalent. So you've gone from the Hollywood curvy look into a very, very, very thin 60s look. So you can see how easy it is for now eating disorders to start picking up in that time. And that's how it stayed really until about the 80s. And then the 80s was similar but different. Same but different. So still quite thin and still very tall, but now a little bit more athletic and a bit more toned. So think supermodels, I guess. I'm rubbish with names. I can't think of any supermodels that would fit. But it was more about the athletic toned look in the 80s. And then the 90s hit. And 90s was heroin chic era. Still very thin. Still very, very thin. Waif-like. Almost ill-looking. That is when you've got people like Kate Moss appearing. You know, they all look really, really skinny and really, really gaunt and not even healthy with it, I don't think. But that was the look of the 90s. And then when you get into the 2000s, it's a bit of a mixed bag. There isn't really a defined shape, I don't think, for the 2000s. It's a bit confusing because you've got the increase of expecting to have a bigger bum and big breasts, but still a very thin waist. You can be voluptuous, but you have to be thin at the same time. Do you know what I mean? There's a definite fitspo look. That's the term, isn't it, that's been coined by social media. Fitspo. You are going to have some shape to you. Immediately to mind comes people like Nicki Minaj. Thin waist, big bum, big boobs. Do you know what I mean? And I think that is what this 2000s phase will look like. And I'm hoping that now we're moving into a bit more body acceptance and body positivity, and now that intuitive eating and health at every size is becoming more widely accepted and understood, that actually the trending body size will now be bigger in the 2020s. Wouldn't it be nice if in the future, when we look back at how shape has evolved, that this period of time is seen as the time where there was no defined body shape because everybody is their own. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? So, to answer your question, I can't really answer your question because it's just fluctuated over the years. It goes back so, so, so far that the evolution between the thinner body type and the curvier body type, it just goes in and out of trend. So I don't know when it became fashionable to be skinny. Just don't know. And I don't think anybody does know This is the way of the human body, though, isn't it? It's always changing. It's always evolving. It's always adapting to surroundings. And I think that's probably where a lot of these changes came from. At one point, it was seen to be of financial stature if you were curvy, if you were a bigger woman, because you were well fed in your household. And other times, if you're overweight, it meant you didn't look after yourself properly. So there's always going to be things going on, ways of thinking changing, that means that trends in how we're expected to be will change. What a great question. I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed researching that one, actually. I was quite amazed at how far back the changes in body type went. It was amazing. Thank you. I've enjoyed today's podcast, actually. I've really enjoyed chatting to you about these things. We've had some really, really great conversation about the food police and things like that in our group coaching sessions. I love the sessions because I always have stuff planned to talk about and then the conversation gets going and everybody has their own opinions and points of view and experiences around this stuff. Everybody's learning. Even me, I learn something new every week from my group sessions. And the real benefit is that everybody gets to talk about the subject. We can research this stuff as much as we want. We can read all the books. We can listen to podcasts. We can listen to speakers and we can follow influencers on social media. But at the end of the day, there is so much more to be had from getting into a group with people and having a chat and learning from others' experiences and seeing different points of views and contributing and talking things through, talking your own experiences through. It's so valuable. And this is why I set up the group coaching. I want people to have a space where they can share their experiences and their journey through their food issues that they've got going on. I would love for you to come and join us. We meet once a week, online, from the comfort of your bedroom, living room, kitchen, garden, wherever you choose to sit. We just get online, we get chatting. I will have a topic each week that we can start the conversation with, but who knows where that conversation might go. What I do know is that we are a group of people with all different food issues. You may feel like you're the only person in the world to be having your battle with food, but I promise you, you are not. I promise you there are other people in the same boat as you. And I promise you that you can fix it. You can sort it out and you can have a better relationship with food. So I'd love to see you there. Have a look at the link in the show notes, or you can simply go to terrypugh.co.uk/intuitively-you. That's the link, but it is in the show notes. Take a look. And if you have any questions, I am, of course, on the end of a message. So drop me a message on one of the social media platforms or send me an email and I'll answer any questions that you have. Until next week, I bid you adieu. I am full of all the fancy accents this week, aren't I? I'm off is what that means. I will see you or speak to you next week.